And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks for listening today. At the Piedmont Women's Center banquet the other night, I happened to had the opportunity to sit next to Nate Loyup, and it was good to be able to sit and talk with you. While I've been to some of the Greenville County Republican meetings, I live in Spartanburg County. I'm in that little bit of Greer that sticks out into Spartanburg. But I've enjoyed the meetings, thought they're very productive. You've been chairman for, what, 2 years? 2 years now?
2 years. I was vice chairman for 4 years prior to that.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I'd seen you. Like, every time I'm over there, I thought, well, there's Nate. So he must have some important job here. So your argument, you're, of course, the election will be April 22nd. And how do people come to the Greenville County Convention? What do they need to do?
So there's two ways. The first is on March 18th, come out to a short evening, about an hour long, called Precinct Reorganization.
Right.
So you meet with some people in your local precinct, your neighborhood. You can elect people to go to the convention, which is the way to come vote for our party leadership. After that, anytime between Monday night and April the 1st, you can come out on April 1st. Again, we're going to have Senator Jim DeMint. You can sign up there. Or if you're just unable to come to either of those nights, email me at chairman@greenvillegop.com, okay, and we'll help you.
Okay. All right. So, but you do have to, you can't just show up. You can go as an observer, but if you want to be a participant and vote, You've got to be elected to do that or selected.
Yeah, we have so many delegate spots in Greenville County and Spartanburg as well. Really, anyone who wants to be a delegate to the county conventions, we have room for you. So it's really a matter of signing up.
All right, the Greenville News is pretty much portraying this as a Greenville Tea Party versus Greenville Republican establishment battle between you and Presley Stutt. So is that a correct characterization?
I would say so. The GOP meetings you've been to is doing extremely well. I've had, I just recently had six past chairmen endorse me. And one of them said, Nate, I've watched over the party for almost three decades. This is the greatest that the Greenville GOP has been doing since I've been involved. We have three purposes of the party. It's to promote our platform, help Republicans get elected, and grow the party. And my campaign is basically going to be answering those three questions. Mm-hmm. I've been promoting our platform. I was actually one of the people who cast a vote at the RNC 2016 convention for our platform. I was one of the 50 in South Carolina that had the privilege of doing that. Helping Republicans get elected last November, we had a clean sweep in Greenville County. My opponent has started attacking our Columbia delegation. Just last week, he started referring to them an old term, rhino. My question is, which one of our delegations are rhinos? Is it freshman Bobby Cox? Is it Adam Morgan? Is it Mark Willis? Is it Gary Smith? Who in our delegation are these rhinos that he's now attacking?
And this is all the state legislature, by the way.
State legislator.
Yeah.
And we know from past comments, my challenger is not a fan of our governor, not a fan of our congressman, not a fan of either two of our senators. So really the argument is, how are you going to effectively run the Republican Party in Greenville County? Now, mind you, I'm not going to say that everybody's perfect and that I don't call them about votes that they take, but how can you effectively run the party when you're at odds and you name call and attack all of our elected officials?
Yeah.
And then the flip side of that is, anyone who comes out to our meetings will see. When I started getting involved in the party about 5 years ago, we were running about 70, 80, 90 people at our meetings. Now, Dr. Beam, you came and led us in prayer at one meeting. I don't know which one it was, but chances are there was 230, 250, 275, 325.
Easy.
So I started my term with Senator Jim DeMint's been very helpful to me as a young chairman. And we had 325 that night, and he's coming back for the last meeting during my first term to help me out once again. So any listener, we'd love to have you out. That's April 1st with Senator Jim DeMint.
Do you accept the moniker establishment Republican? Is that something that, is that to you, what does that say to you? Is that a compliment? Is it a insult? Is it, what is it?
Depending on
who's using
what time of period it is.
Right.
Anyone who gets elected to any leadership position, no matter how conservative they are, immediately is establishment. And it's easy to take shots at people from the outside. I've learned that if you poke people in the eye, they're less likely to work with you. So there are people that I disagree with. I use an example for a county tax hike once. I was opposed to the tax hike, and someone chided me on Facebook saying, "We were out on the road holding signs out before the vote, and you were in, you know, just hobnobbing with the elected officials and the councilmen." And he said, "Where were you? Why weren't you supporting us?" And I just tried to politely say, I fail to see your method of holding signs to people driving by in cars when I was petitioning the people that were getting ready to vote to either not vote for it or change right. their vote or split their vote.
Right.
Methodology is really what it comes down to in upstate politics, because we're almost all very conservative. In the Greenville GOP, I really can't name you anyone I would consider a moderate. We're very conservative. No one is more platform than I am.
And I'll just tell you, Nate, that's been my experience with you. We haven't had a whole lot of experience together, but the times that we've interacted and when I've been to the Greenville meetings, I haven't seen anything that led me to believe that there's some kind of infiltration of moderates that are trying to take the Republican Party in a direction that we wouldn't want it to go. I mean, I just haven't. That hasn't been my experience. What is the response to your candidacy? Are you, well, you just said you've had six former GOP chairmen to endorse you, and you've got Senator DeMint coming back. So are you feeling good about this? Do you think you have the support that you need?
Run like you're 20 points behind. That's what I tell every candidate that I talk with. Doesn't matter how you feel. Last thing you want to be is like the Eric Cantor. I don't take anything for advantage. I'm working crazy hard. I've got a lot of support. I've got financial support coming in. People that I don't know too well are saying, "Nate, we've watched you from afar." So it's really great to have that support. What it all comes down to is turnout. My challenger is turning out people who have left the party, very angry, dissatisfied people. And I basically say this: if you have a problem with Representative Gary Smith, you're not going to like me. I mean, Gary's one of the greatest conservative champions in the upstate.
No question.
If you dislike our delegation, you're probably not cut out to be a Republican at that point, because Greenville has a conservative delegation. I'm a big champion for closed primaries, and I have been for a decade. I serve on the state committee to close our primaries, and that's something.
So
that
is that something
for.
Have you been accused of not being in favor of closed primaries? I mean, is that something?
Innuendos are crazy during this time of the year. Yeah. I learned the other day that I was on the convention floor in 2016 trying to dump Trump. And yesterday I was with a senior official for the Trump administration. We were walking down Pennsylvania Avenue, actually, and we were talking about this. And he said, "Nate, I was standing right next to you on the convention floor. How in the world can, you know, this be said about you? You know, I opposed the rule change that they were trying to use to stop Trump from being the nominee." I said, "It's unfair at this point. You know, Trump won fair and square. The amount of delegates it took, you don't change the rules, you know, at the end of the game." And so I've had people call me. I've had other delegates call me. My friend Stephen Brown said the same thing. You know, "I was on the convention floor with you. How can they say this?" Or I love Stephen Brown. Stephen Brown said, "I was the lawyer for closing our primaries. I, of all people, know that you support closed primaries." But when you get desperate, when you're trying to attack, you know, the incumbent, you say things that aren't necessarily based in fact. And so my campaign is going to be about fact. Am I perfect? No. Have I said things that a few years later I'm thinking, "Man, what a dumb statement did I say?" Yeah, I said that. I'm not perfect.
Well, yeah.
So I got to live up to those things. But I have a record that I'm really proud of. Our elected officials are proud of it. Active Republicans are proud of it. So I'm counting on active Republicans to come out, but we need any of your listeners that are Republicans. We need them to come out, sign up for this event, and get involved.
Yeah, and we'll talk about how to do that again in a minute. I wanted to ask you about your trip to Washington, because you got to meet with some of the leaders of the Republican Party. And just what was the general direction of the conversation? What's on everybody's mind?
A group called CRESS that I'm involved with flew us up there, got to stay in the Trump Hotel. What an experience. Unbelievable. If anyone wants to bite the bullet and stay overnight there, I highly recommend it. They set up meetings with, we met first with William Timmons, and then Senator Scott, and then Senator Graham. We had a meeting scheduled with Mitch McConnell that didn't work out, but we did meet in his office with his legislative director. And our topic was really opposing AOC's this Green New Deal bill,
right.
But also presenting a conservative option to it. I'm an above all energy or all of the above energy person, and solar. We definitely need to invest in innovation and research, make things better for the future. Still nuclear, still everything else.
Yeah, but you're a person, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you can stop me if I'm going down the wrong path here. But I assume that you're someone who believes that these are processes that are going to happen organically and naturally and don't need to be forced on the country in a way that hurts the economy.
Definitely. Capitalism is the key.
Yeah.
Now, you can incentivize, you can promote. One thing that I'm very interested in is storage for solar. Anything that we can do to promote storage, battery cells, the development of that, I think that will help our economy.
Right.
The jobs that clean energy brings is actually a positive on the capitalism side. We don't want to hurt any, no red tape. I mean, red tape is horrible for our economy. So we can do a lot of stuff to promote development of science and energy.
Well, it looks like you could look at the Obama administration record on green incentives and see what happens when the government tries to make something happen, as opposed to allowing a capitalist free market system for these things to rise organically. That's when they're successful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not when the government steps in and says, you got to do this. So,
and as I just turned 39 yesterday, so I still consider myself a younger generation. It's an issue that is extremely important. We've seen polls. If the Republican Party doesn't take the opportunity to reach younger generations through things like this, especially when AOC is presenting this crazy plan to
right.
step in and say, you know, there is some stuff that we can do. I'm not a global warming fanatic. Climate change, I don't care what the discussion is. I'm a conservative. I want to make sure that we're being good stewards of what God gave us. So I always approach anything climate related or energy related to, we should be good stewards. What can we do to better our environment? Not because I believe, you know, as a Christian worldview, we know the end of the story. I'm not worried about that, but I don't want to be a person that throws trash down. I'm actually kind of weird. I'm that guy who, when I brush my teeth, I turn the water off. I see things like that. It bothers me. It's really weird. So I present it from just being a good steward of the of our
sure.
environment that God
Which
gave
is,
us.
As Christians, that's part of the mandate that God gave us, is to be good stewards of the environment. And obviously we should do that. All right, real quick. And by the way, I'm 61 and I'm with you. I want to help. As a member of the younger generation, I want to help that generation succeed. And so, give us the layout again. When are the meetings? What's the process that somebody has to go through if they want to be a voting member at the Greenville County Convention?
On Monday, March 18th.
Okay.
Either this coming Monday.
Right.
You would be meeting. Your precinct will be meeting at the Hilton Hotel or your local precinct. That information can be found at GreenvilleGOP.com.
Okay.
If you don't know your precinct name, look on your voter ID card, or you can go to a website that tells you that information.
Okay.
Come out on that night. If you can't come out on that night, it may be just easiest just to send me an email at chairman@greenvillegop.com.
Okay. chairman@greenvillegop.com.
Yes, sir.
Got it. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you taking some time. Nate Loyp, he's the chairman of the Greenville County Republican Party and running to be chairman again April 22nd. We'll be back in 3 minutes with more Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah.
Right now, let's head on to our interview with Dr. Tony Beam and Jim DeMint.
All right, welcome back. This is Tony Beam. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah, and we're doing a pre-recorded interview right now. It's going to be live on Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah on Facebook, and of course you can't hear this now, but when you do hear it, if you want to go look it up, it'll be posted there. So we're talking today with a very special guest, a good friend of mine. When I saw him a while ago, I had to give him a hug because I haven't seen him in a long time, and you're one of those guys that I have so much respect for and appreciate your leadership through the years. Is Jim DeMint. Welcome to the program.
Tony, it's so great to be back in studio with you, and thank you for what you've done all these years, just putting the word out over the airwaves. And you're just a title, Christian Worldview. It's something we need to think about
every day. We really do.
How can we make that possible for everyone?
Well, one of the ways that you're making it possible here in South Carolina, one of the things that you're pushing for, not only in South Carolina but nationwide, is school choice. And that is such an important topic. I think our education system has a lot of ills. Mm-hmm. I think that a little capitalism and competition injected into the education system would fix maybe not everything, but it'd get us on the road. So talk about school choice.
Well, if we want to have a free society, Tony, we've got to have people with the character and capabilities to succeed in a free society. Otherwise, the government's going to have to take care of them, and we've seen how that works out. So it's a top priority, and it should be for Christians particularly. I have four children. We were able to send them to a Christian academy that was part of our church through the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And I think it made a real difference in their life, not only to get good academics, but to learn about the Lord, the values that that we think make them better people. We cannot succeed as a society if we continue to push all our public school money through government schools. We teach them about faith for 2 hours on Sunday, and then we send them for 30 hours to an education system that deprograms them. God didn't create the world, and all kinds of things, including what we're seeing now in politics, socialism. So if I could pick one issue that could change everything, could help fix poverty, crime, juvenile delinquency, drug use. We know statistically that if we can get someone through high school without having a child, the chances of them being successful are in the 90% range.
Right.
And regardless of how poor you are when you start. In South Carolina, we spend more, believe it or not, than most of our southeastern states per capita for child. And even in the poorest communities, we're pushing a lot of money through these schools that are not well-run, and students are not getting a good education. There's a new idea. I mean, aside from the old ones that we've talked about, vouchers and credits, and a lot of us in the Christian community, particularly Christian schools, were afraid of any of those things because they would come with government strings attached.
Right.
But the new idea of education scholarship accounts has been tested in court, And it works because it takes the state portion of public school money, which in South Carolina is $5,000 or $6,000 a year, and gives it to the parent to create an education environment where their children can succeed.
Right.
The parent can take that to a private school, a Christian school, parochial school. They can go to a little local church and get 10 families together, hire a teacher, and teach a small classrooms of courses, and buy outside tutors to teach algebra or something that teacher might not can teach. If you're disabled, you can go to a school that is focused on your child's needs. And in South Carolina, we're debating that right now, Tony. And for any Christian in the state should see this as an opportunity for us to begin to take control of education again, to create a system where we can raise children in the future that share our values and faith in a way that's not only good for them, but it's good for our whole society.
Sure.
And so it's possible now, and it's been proven in about six other states. This is not theory. We need to get behind the legislators.
All right. Obviously, the critics are going to line up and say you're going to undermine the public school system. This is fine for people who can do it, but everybody can't do it. We've got to have a strong public school system. What about from the six states where this is a program like this is in place?
Mm-hmm.
Has it done anything to hurt the system, or has it actually helped it?
Tony, this that critique or criticism doesn't play anymore. We've had data for 20 years now. For instance, Florida started a lot of these things 20 years ago.
Right.
Their public schools were not as good as South Carolina when they started. They're much better now. All of the states that implement choice, their public schools improve. And in a situation like this with education scholarship accounts, only the state amount of money, $5,000 or $6,000, moves with the child. That leaves somewhere close to $8,000 to $10,000,
right,
of local and federal money in that school. And so public schools get better, and they see the innovation and best practices happening all around them, and they tend to adopt that in other states. So we don't have any research that would suggest public schools do anything but get better if you create more choice.
So all six of the states that have employed some form of this, it's working, and there's enough data out there to say that it's working well.
It's working. It's been tested in court. Arizona started it first, and they start kind of like we're debating now with the lower grades and working their way up. They're now at the universal level that everyone has access to it, but they've just got about 100,000 kids who are doing it because parents don't have to leave a public school. They
right.
can. But what it takes a little time for people to catch the vision. A local church that has all these classrooms for Sunday school could easily create a school with all the technology and online courses and pay the best teachers in the world with that amount of money. And that's what's happening in these states.
Well, you know, we're talking about education reform in South Carolina, and there's going to be some education reform that gets passed this year. But again, it's going to be primarily trying to put money in a system that is not working
right.
well. We've dropped below Mississippi. You know, we used to say in South Carolina, thank God for Mississippi.
Right.
Well, Mississippi's now passed us in education, and there's kind of a panic going on about that. But the solutions that they're seeking is some of the older solutions that have never really brought that much change.
You're right, Tony. The speaker has been leading on this, and there's some things we do need to do. The speaker's bill, as they call it, is passed the House, is bipartisan. It brought teacher pay up to the southeastern average. It
right.
reduced some of paperwork because it's hard to retain and attract teachers to a profession where you have to take a load of paperwork home every night. So there's some things that we need to do. But they will also be debating in Columbia these education scholarship accounts this
Excellent.
Year in both the House and the Senate and the committees. We want people to go to the website of palmettopromise.org and go to get involved. And if you'll find education scholarship accounts there, and you can sign a petition. Because if we don't let those legislators know that we're behind them, particularly Christians across the state, that we're behind them, they're going to think that they're wrong because the teachers, national teachers unions mm-hmm. are going to make mm-hmm. so much noise.
Right.
The national administrators, unions, associations, just about everybody involved with the status quo is going to put pressure on these guys not to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't, like you said, we can't just keep funneling. We're spending nearly $15,000 a year per student in South Carolina.
Right.
And that's more than just about any country in the world spends per capita. I think we probably are close to the top. So why be satisfied with something that is not only less than the best, it's at the very bottom.
Yeah.
And
it obviously at this point, it should be crystal clear that it's not the money, it's the model.
It's the model. It's not the teachers.
It's
just that if we take all this public school money and insist it has to go through a government-run school, I mean, if all you have to do is think about that a few minutes, what does government run well? I mean, the more they get involved with health care, the higher the costs get, the lower the quality. I mean, it's everywhere you look.
Right.
So now is the time we could change things in South Carolina. We've all been talking about it, but it just seemed out of our reach. But if people in South Carolina will just let the legislators know, the senators down there and the governor, they want to make this the education year. And believe me, they don't think just raising teacher pay and reducing paperwork is going to do the trick. If we let them know, they'll get bold. But I have never gotten more abuse than I did on the Education Committee in Congress when I tried to implement some forms of state flexibility.
Right.
All the teachers back in South Carolina heard that I was against public schools. That's all they heard. And I got thousands of calls and letters. So whenever you touch that teachers union territory, these guys are going to get killed. So I want to get their back. So palmettopromise.org, get involved, education scholarship account, sign the petition, put your email on there, and we'll let these folks know it's worth fighting for. And again, I don't know anything as Christians we could do that would be more important than giving parents the choice of putting their kids in an environment where they could grow up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Absolutely. I agree. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back since you've got a few minutes, and we'll do another segment. I want to ask you two more questions and then find out a little bit about your future.
All right.
You want to talk about it. All right, welcome back. We're still having our conversation with Jim DeMint today. We've been talking about school choice nationwide and also in South Carolina, how that works in other states, and it can work for South Carolina. Let's just remind people, palmettopromise.org, and what else do they need to do to
just
get involved?
Push the little get involved button, and they'll see education scholarship accounts.
Excellent.
Sign up, sign the petition, and we'll lend your name to with everyone else's to let these folks know in Columbia we're standing with them.
All right, let me ask you just a couple of other questions. National debt has been, for conservatives, I mean, Republicans ran on the national debt against President Obama for years, called out the president for increasing the national debt, not paying any attention to the national debt, runaway spending. Then we get President Trump elected, and we're actually spending money at a faster clip than we did under President Obama.
Yeah.
I mean, the national debt is now has just crossed the $22 trillion mark. How long can we make that? What's going to have to be done? Is there any hope?
Well, we've always got to have hope, or
yes,
we can't get up in the morning. But
right.
One of the reasons I ran for Congress is the debt was $4 trillion, Tony.
That's right.
I mean, and I knew that at some point we hit a wall where we have a crisis of the dollar, some form of financial crisis. We don't know when that is. But we did a lot of studies when I was in the House and the Senate, and most of the economists we were talking to at the time would say somewhere between 20 and 25 trillion, depending on the growth of the economy, is when you hit a point where you can no longer sell your treasury notes. Mm-hmm. And when you have nearly $1 trillion debt per year, you have to sell a lot of debt to China and other places. It puts us in a vulnerable position where China, Iran, Russia, these could get together and start dumping our debt at lower than the value, and all of a sudden it'd be a run on the bank, in effect. So
right.
I know I'm getting in the weeds a little bit, but your question is very pertinent because we are close to a point, we have to be close to a point where things begin to shut down, where we have to print money, and when we start printing money, we end up like Venezuela. So we've got to get control of the spending, and it's not a revenue problem. It's not the tax cuts have caused this problem.
Right.
We have record level of revenue coming into the federal government now, more than we've ever had in history, and we've still got nearly $1 trillion of debt in 1 year being added. And, you know, speaking to Trump early, he saw it is important to get the economy going and get some things, and then come back to things like the debt. I know Mulvaney has talked to him. Mick Mulvaney, South Carolinian.
That's right, sitting right there, chief of staff.
Yeah, chief of staff in the budget office just a few months ago. I mean, he and I were talking. He's trying to get convinced the president, and I think he's making headway now that the economic advisors who were from New York, the trading desk, have gone home, and now he's got Larry Kudlow and you know, Steve Moore and some others around him who I know are telling him that it's all going to be rosy until it stops. And so we cannot pretend that there's going to be something where there's a slow decline. We're the world's reserve currency. If there's a loss of faith for 10 minutes in our dollar, and the only thing now, Tony, that's propping us up is the rest of the world is such a basket case
right.
that we can be irresponsible and still get away with it, but we don't know for how long. But we've got to stop thinking in Washington, and this was part of what I tried to do with getting rid of earmarks and moving education back to the states and transportation. As long as Washington tries to do everything and meddle in just about every area of our lives,
right.
they're going to be spending money and bankrupting the country. And so that's what we're working on now, is just trying to identify those things like education choice, where the more states take control, the more we see in Washington, we don't need to solve the problem. Right. We just need to get out of it.
Well, we're going to have to get a hold of spending. I have great respect for Senator Ben Sasse from mm-hmm. Nebraska. He's written a book called Them. And in that book, he talks a lot about the processes of rebuilding community. And part of that is going to have to be getting a hold of responsibility again, becoming a responsible citizenry.
Right.
And I think it is really important that we do that. Let's talk a little bit about another issue that is really, I'm very curious about your opinion on this. You know, things do change quickly in the culture that we are in today,
mm-hmm.
but I'm stunned at what has happened in the midterms in 2018 with the Democrat Party.
Right.
I mean, they all of a sudden took a gigantic left turn. Now, maybe they've been tacking to the left. They've been drifting to the left. I mean, I get it. But 2018 and the candidates that are running for president, socialism, abortion while the baby's in the birth canal and maybe after the baby's born, we're talking about 70% taxes. We're talking about gun confiscation. Every left-wing shopping list item is out there front and center, and they're running on that platform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question, am I missing something? Is that who we are as a country? Are these people going to get elected on a platform like that, or are they crazy and they're going to lose big, or are they only doing it for the primary and then they'll become moderates once somebody gets the nomination? I mean, that's a lot, but...
Well, they're all good questions. What's happened because of campaign finance reform several years back is the financing of candidates has moved from the parties to all these outside groups. Mm-hmm. Democracy Alliance, which includes a whole lot of the George Soros-type money and the Rob Steins and others, they're funding most of the candidates. So you've got Justice Democracy, the thing that AOC, basically she auditioned for.
Right.
They are funding this, and they're driving the agenda further to the left. And so the Democratic Party has very little say in that. They've started Act Blue, which is raising low dollar amounts of money, but it's the big dollars that control a lot of the agenda. But Tony, they're smarter than generally the Republicans are. And what I very much suspect is what you indicated is they're going to be running like they're crazy leftists, probably all the way up to the primary. You'll have one or two who start to moderate before the primary. Somebody like Joe Biden might win, and he'll be seen as, a moderate after all of that. They're just kind of, with all this crazy stuff, softening the belly in the boxing match. I suspect down the stretch they're going to say, yeah, the economy's good, but what kind of retirement security do you have? Because about 80% of Americans can't get past the next paycheck, have almost nothing for retirement. They start talking about dropping the age for Social Security payments, maybe not Medicare for all, but you can start it at 50. I'm convinced that they will kind of draw it way out to the left and then come back to something that's still crazy, but will sound a lot more reasonable. And the Republicans will still be out there trying to run on the economy, which is yesterday's news for a lot of people. What are you going to do for me next? So I do believe they're smart, but leftists have come out of the closet all over the world. They believe in government control.
Yes.
And the education system, which we started with today, has not taught people how the economy really works. They don't understand the invisible hand, Adam Smith, wealth and nut. I mean, they think socialism is good because social media is a good thing. I mean, they really don't know what it is, except it sounds like sharing. So we've got a job to do to get people involved, engaged, and informed. And a lot of it comes back as we've just turned our kids over to government-run schools.
No, they're coming out with these ideas.
We're seeing a generation that really started back when I was in college, where we're breaking all the molds, and now you've got a generation that's followed that. But we should never give up hope here. It's, I mean, God's in control of this.
Yes.
And he may be moving us towards the end times for all I know. I'm not predicting that. But I do know he's made us stewards of this country. Okay, when he comes back, I don't want to be found sitting on the treasurer. And that's why I still go to Washington. I'm working with conservatives, trying to help them get more effective. And back home, what we really need to do is realize what Republicans in Washington often don't know. We're in a fight. This is not going to be solved with, certainly civility, but we're in a fight. The left is trying to take our values away. Like you said, they're ready to kill kids up to the moment they're born and afterwards.
Right.
They really do believe in socialism. They think the government should be controlling education, transportation, environment. This whole climate thing change is just an international effort to get more global control of things.
Right. Absolutely.
If you understand statistics at all, that one's is about as crazy as the Green Deal. But we've got to realize that we have to engage. We've got to get churches back engaged. And I would just hope more and more pastors will forget this threat of losing their tax-exempt status, lead, write editorials, teach biblical morality, and push for this chance to have schools in your church. All these churches have classrooms for Sunday school that sit idle 6 days a week. Why don't we create something where thousands of churches around the country, around the state, could actually have first-class education for kids? I just think more than anything else, it would engage everyone in this fight.
You mentioned a statistic. I think this came from Ben Sasse's book, where he talked about there are three things that if you do these three things in order, that you have a greater than 90% chance that you will never live in poverty.
Right.
If you do them in order. And the first one is graduate. Now, that means from school. From high school.
Yeah.
That's right. Doesn't mean college or anything. Just stay in school till you get a degree, a high school diploma or whatever. Then get married. Get a job and keep, get a job and keep a job and get married before you have a baby. If you do those three things, there's a greater than 90% chance that you will never live in poverty. And that's those things are not only economically linked, but there's a moral link to them. Obviously, get married before you have a baby. That's a moral question. The idea of schools, morality, the church, all of those have to come together and work together if we're going to get out of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the statistics are so clear. If you graduate high school, the chances of you using drugs, even having a child before marriage, crime, jail, just about a large percent of the people who are in jail today didn't graduate high school. They dropped out, started taking drugs, committed crimes.
Right.
So, but people are going to drop out of school if they can't succeed.
Exactly.
And if you can't read by the time you get into middle school, you're not going to be thinking about being shamed in front of all your peers as you go through high school. People keep getting pushed forward. And we can fix that. And parents, if they could get engaged, and I'm talking about the poorest single mom. I've never seen people more interested in getting their kid in a charter school or any kind of alternative than a poor single mom who would just like her child to have a chance.
Yeah.
And so when I hear people say, well, they can't have choice because these people don't know how to make choices, they'll make choices if they have the power to do it. And they'll learn more, just like we didn't think anyone could ever learn to do a computer until you had a PhD.
Right.
But once you had a chance to buy one, you've got five-year-olds running computers well now.
Absolutely.
So we'll learn what we have the ability to make a difference with. And so education's key, and so Christians have got to get back into that. We can't accept what we've been doing for the last generation, where we tell them about the Lord for 2 hours, and then we send them to a place for 30 hours a week where they say there is no Creator God.
Agreed. PalmettoPromise.org is the place to go. Check it out. Go to, and that's where you're going to Washington, pushing these ideas, working with conservatives, still in the game. Not interested in running for office again, I don't guess.
Well, not right now, because I feel like I can make more of a difference outside.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you feel like you're more effective now?
Well, I'm working in the state, not just South Carolina, but with a lot of states who innovate, because that's one way to push back against Washington.
Right.
I go to Washington when they're in session with our new organization, Conservative Partnership Institute, and that's conservativepartnership.org. And we are a service group for conservatives inside of Congress, mm-hmm. because I've just seen so many that I've helped elect come up, and within a few months, it seems, they've gone bad. They're just the Republican leadership put K Street staff in their office. Suddenly they're taking bad votes, and they forget what they were running on.
Right.
And we're trying to create an environment that they can meet and get good staff, get the right ideas about policies, convene, develop consensus. So we've got a building right next to the Library of Congress across from the Capitol where the Freedom Caucus meets from the House and a lot of the conservatives from the Senate. But so I'm trying to make a difference, and I just can I can serve more of them out of office than I can in the office. And besides, I'm not quite old enough to run for office yet. All the good presidents are in their 70s.
Yeah, that's right. You gotta wait a little while, grow up a little bit.
That's right.
God bless you, man. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Tony.
It's
good
always
to see
a
you again.
Good to see you. All right, we'll be back in 3 minutes. Don't go away.